You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
From Hamilton, Ontario, this is the Green Planet Monitor, your weekly report on Earth systems, human development, justice, and science. Today, a deep dive into our audio vault, a documentary about planet Earth, Earth in Motion. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm Dave Kattenberg. Before diving in, a quick appeal. If you appreciate what you're hearing, help us out. Subscribe to the Green Planet Monitor at greenplanetmonitor.net. Now the news with Kylie Wong.
As temperatures reach all-time highs across Antarctica, a gap in Antarctic sea ice as big as France is raising concerns about the accelerating pace of climate breakdown. Ice loss in the Bellingshausen Sea is depressing, says Dr. Will Hobbs, a sea ice expert at the University of Tasmania. The Bellingshausen Sea on Antarctica's west side is now almost completely ice-free. This is the third time in 4 years that sea ice has been low, says Hobbs. I don't think we will see sea ice there anymore. It's done. Antarctic sea ice loss is likely linked to warming seas that surround it, Earth scientists say. In a show of unity, Palestinian and Israeli civil society groups are urging G7 nations to intervene in Gaza. On the margins of the G7 summit in Evian, France, they called on leaders to make a two-state solution happen. Most observers agree that a sovereign Palestinian state will never form. Israel, widely described as an apartheid state, is staunchly opposed to Palestinian statehood. Palestinian and Israeli civil society leaders are also calling for an enforceable ceasefire in Gaza and the start of reconstruction. Gaza is devastated, they said in a joint statement, without using the term genocide. Genocide charges against Israel are plausible, the International Court of Justice ruled in 2024. Although Canada exports food around the world, Canadians continue to grapple with soaring grocery bills. A new food strategy aims to address this. Prime Minister Mark Carney unveiled it last week, a $3.2 billion 10-year plan aimed at lowering grocery costs, boosting domestic food production, and reducing reliance on imported food. The strategy includes investments in food terminals designed to help independent grocers compete with dominant grocery chains and funding for greenhouse expansion. Global conflict, climate change, and concentrated grocery markets threaten Canada's food system, Carney says. We are going to grow more at home, process more at home, and feed more Canadians with Canadian food. According to a new report by immigration lawyers and advocates, aggressive enforcement tactics by Canada Border Service agents in Quebec have brought deportations there to record levels. The report describes cases in which migrants were detained at homes, workplaces, and schools, then deported without due process. These measures are unprecedented and disproportionately affect Quebec, which accounts for more than half the country's deportations, immigrant advocates say. The federal government has increased border service funding and set ambitious removal targets, leading to more than 23,000 deportations in 2025, the highest annual total on record. And that's the news.
Thanks, Kylie. Of 1992 and the spring of 1994, that's over 30 years ago, backpack on my back and a vintage analog Niagara 3 reel-to-reel tape recorder over my shoulder, I traveled across Canada twice, visiting places and interviewing people from Prince Edward Island to the west coast of Vancouver Island and everywhere in between. Out of this audio recording adventure, 32 hour-length documentaries emerged exploring planet Earth, global ecology, and sustainable human development. The Earth Chronicles, the series was called. Co-producer Peter Hutton and I raised an astonishing $120,000 for the radio project. It's equivalent to about $220,000 today. Producing the Earth Chronicles was a task of epic proportions. In a room at a student abode called the Yellow Brick House on Strathcona Street South, countless hours were spent listening back to all these voices on dozens and dozens of reels of quarter-inch tape, wax pencil and razor blade in hand, slicing, splicing, and assembling sequences, lengths of magnetic tape around my neck, over my shoulder and knees, piled up neatly across the floor, across town, in the production studio of 93.3 CFM-UFM, McMaster University Radio, different location than it is today, I pumped out 32 editions of the Earth Chronicles, all perfectly narrationless, voicescapes. Here's one of the first editions in the Earth Chronicles series, Earth in Motion. Lots of eminent geologists and humble rock lovers, also attuned by a guy named Sean O'Halloran. Sean was one of Hamilton's most talented singer-songwriters back then. Tectonics is one of 14 songs Sean wrote for the Earth Chronicles, performed by Sean on guitar, accompanied by veteran Hamilton-area percussionist and veteran CFMU jazz host Paul Panchazik. Sean O'Halloran passed away in 2019, way before his time. So here we go. This is how each Earth Chronicles edition opened up. The intros were incredibly long. They could have been edited down, but they were what they were, and they still are. These are the Earth Chronicles, recorded voices from a warm, wet planet. How Earth formed, her twistings and turnings.
The origin of the Earth and the origin of the oldest rocks.
The continents are continually in movement.
The thin film of life enveloping her.
But we were alive and well 3.8 billion years ago.
But we're not at the top. There's always other beings that are considered higher than us.
And there's birds, there's insects.
The extraordinary activities of one life form.
A couple cities or entire towns' water supplies were being poisoned and people were drinking it.
What we've done is we gave industry a carte blanche.
People think they can always take and take and take.
These people are behaving like dinosaurs.
If humans left Canada, the trees would be very happy indeed.
What some humans are doing to preserve their planet, their home, their mother, themselves.
People don't give a damn what happened billions of years ago, really, except for curiosity.
It's going to take a cultural change.
There isn't another world anywhere that we know of that we could just move to.
Mother Earth.
But people are very concerned what will happen in the next 50 years.
These are the Earth chroniclers. They will tell their own stories without narration.
This planet is still vigorously changing.
Tectonic processes, that's the word they use in geology for basically these kind of dynamic processes when rocks start crashing together.
The Earth is convecting, it is mixing.
I'm trying to give you a feeling for how dynamic the balance is of the surface on which we live.
Language of the rock. I see the rock. It speaks to me in a language all its own. I sense I've heard its words long ago. Relative of mine from days gone by, whispering, open yourself and pay heed to my cry. We are one traveling the traveled path. Walk upon me, stay a while, feel me between your toes, envelop me, take me in the bosom of your soul, gather me in your own unique collection, remembering I will always be here, no fear of rejection. I am rock, you are man, you will return, we are the same.
My name is Lester House. I'm a Plains Cree Indian person now living in the Rocky Mountains. To me, and to many people, I guess, they're like people. They're rock people. You look at them from one angle, if you will, and you look them from look at the opposite angle or the other end, say the other direction, opposite from where you were originally looking at them. You get a whole different perspective. It's just like people. You know? To me, that's what they are. Like rock people, you know? And for anyone who's got the time, they should sit sometime quietly and talk to the rocks. Talk to them. They're real. Whether they respond or not, who knows? Find out. Find out about rocks.
Yeah, it's Ben Gadd from Jasper, Alberta. We're sitting tonight in the middle of Jasper National Park with a bit of wind playing around the door, but otherwise it's pretty nice weather. And thinking about what Lester House said about rocks. I'm a geologist, so I really get a kick out of what people think about rocks. Of course, Lester has a very spiritual side. I think it really dominates his life, and he likes to think that everything has a kind of life to it, a sort of spirituality. And I suppose it might, but I was brought up to as a geologist at university, thinking about rocks scientifically. And when Lester said that rocks might talk to him, to a geologist, rocks do speak in a sense. When I sit down with a rock outcrop, it's kind of a friend of mine. I know the name of the formation and how old it is, and what kind of rock it is, and I can recognize it all over the Rocky. So the botanists know their plant names, and geologists know the formation names. So the rocks tell me things, too. They don't tell me spiritual things. I don't listen to them for guidance about my life or about the way of the world. Maybe Lester can get that out of them. But they tell me things about the world the way I see it. You might think of it as a cold eye of a scientist.
One of the great dreams of all the geologists who work determining the age of rocks is to find the oldest rock. Right at the moment, the oldest rock is in the Northwest Territories of Canada. It used to be in Greenland, used to be in Australia, used to be in Southern Africa, but it's now in the Northwest Territories, not too far from Yellowknife. And it's about 3.98 billion years old. My name is Bill Fife. I'm a geology professor at the University of Western Ontario. Very, very interested in the Earth and its environment, its biosphere, and how it all works. We're all just beginning to learn what a complicated system this is, and we better understand it and respect it. Once we start getting a bigger and better record, more fragments to examine scattered around the planet, it's interesting that nearly all of the rocks are submarine. It almost looks as if the world had a sort of almost completely globe-encircling ocean. It was also very volcanic, just thousands of Hawaiis floating around in an ocean. Quite an exciting place.
The Earth is a heat engine. It started off liquid, and it cooled down a bit, and it has a liquid core, and it's kept liquid by the remnant radioactive materials which were formed when the planets first began to stick together about 4.5 billion years ago. My name is Digby McLaren. I was born in Ireland, went to school in Scotland and Northern England, and came to Canada after the war in 1948, where they gave me half a continent to play in because I'm a geologist. We've still got evidence. It's very easy evidence. Everybody can see it. The evidence for this heat that is being lost. First of all, we have volcanoes. We have volcanoes in two belts in the world, all the way around the Pacific, a rim of fire, volcanoes all around, from Kamchatka up and the Kuriles down the west coast of North America, down the west coast of South America, round and of course in Southeast Asia and Japan. You've got these large volcanoes blowing off every now and again. You've got another belt running right around the world, a little bit north of the equator, which is the Alps, Himalayan, and down into Southeast Asia belt. This is more or less at right angles to the Pacific belt. And that also is a belt of fire. And also these two belts, the Circumpacific and the Himalayan belt right across the center, are also areas of high earthquake activity. catastrophes happen all the time. Major earthquakes happen in these two belts. They are as a result of the plates that we live on now, the North and South America, Africa plate, the various plates which have come together to form Asia, and so on. These plates are all moving, and they're always moving. And they move, the speed at which they move is quite easily measurable by accurate survey systems. It's a few centimeters a year, but over 50 million years, that's a long way. Work it out.
Paul Hoffman, I was formerly with the Geological Survey of Canada, and I'm now with the School of Earth and Ocean Sciences at University of Victoria. The floors of the ocean are sinking down into the mantle. And when the ocean floor sinks into the mantle, the ocean floor heats up and releases water into the hot overlying mantle material, triggering melting. And so associated with each of the areas where the ocean floor is sinking, you get lines of volcanoes. And those volcanoes are surface manifestations of the rise of magma. And where those lines of volcanoes are plastered together, continents are formed. And when one looks at the most ancient rocks within continents, one sees lines of volcanoes and their subsurface equivalents plastered together one after another.
My name is Peter Edward Steele. The Nipissing Ridge is one of the oldest chunks of rock on planet Earth. The mountain range was formed when one of the plates shifted and all that movement went on years ago. They've studied up to four different times that the plates have moved around in a rather rapid fashion and banged into another plate and crunched up mountain ranges. Volcanoes blew up. The earth was very active. Lots of things happened right here. The Lake Nipissing was three volcanoes just 4 miles north of here. They spewed lava out down this way over an old seabed. Yeah, this is right out of the heart of the Earth. This is the original crust formation and the violence and the eruption and the twisting and volcanoes and plates shifting and continents moving. I think Alaska and, or is it, they're all moving apart still. We've got 3 inches a year on the ocean floors moving. All kinds of volcanic eruptions. It's still a volatile world. It's all shifting.
Gradually accumulate together to form large continental masses, but those masses seem to contain the seeds of their own destruction, so that after forming, those continents disintegrate after a few hundreds of millions of years and become dispersed as fragments of the former supercontinent, only to be reorganized again in another supercontinent, and so on. Over geologic time, there seems to have been an episodic pattern of aggregation and disintegration of large continental masses. And one of the ideas that's being investigated is that the continents come together as a result of large-scale flows within the underlying mantle, and that these flows tend to move continents toward areas of mantle downwelling, a little bit like leaves floating on water and accumulating at an eddy. The continents seem to move together and accumulate over one of these downwelling areas of the mantle convection system. The mantle underneath a very large continent becomes hotter, inducing a convective upwelling, which causes the supercontinent to become elevated and weaken because of the high heat flow, such that the supercontinent ultimately disintegrates and disperses. A rift is a zone of separation of two continental masses. So if the continent is trying to be pulled apart by some divergent flow of mantle beneath it, then commonly the continents will separate along a weak zone, and that line of separation will be manifested at the surface by a system of valleys, like the East African Rift Valley, which is an area where the African continent is attempting to break up. The Bay of Fundy is a very ancient rift valley that formed when the North Atlantic Ocean opened, when Europe pulled away from North America. And the Bay of Fundy was a rift valley where a partial separation took place, but the separation was not complete. The most recent supercontinent is the supercontinent of Pangaea. Pangaea consisted of a southern half called Gondwanaland and a northern half called Laurasia. Gondwanaland consisted of South America, Africa, India, Australia, and Antarctica, which came together at the end of the Precambrian about 600 million years ago to form a large continental mass called Gondwanaland. About 300 million years ago, Gondwanaland collided with North America, which was at that time connected to Europe. And that collision formed the Appalachian Mountains. When Gondwanaland and Laurasia collided together, that initiated the supercontinent of Pangaea, which became complete when the Eastern Asian continental masses of Siberia and the blocks of China and Southeast Asia came together to form the supercontinent of Pangaea. And Pangaea lasted more or less intact from around 300 million years ago until about 150 million years ago when it started to disintegrate. And the process of disintegration of Pangaea basically involved the opening of the Atlantic, the present-day Atlantic. The Atlantic has been getting larger as a result of seafloor spreading in the mid-Atlantic ridge, and the Pacific has been getting smaller as a result of the subduction or sinking of the Pacific Ocean floor underneath North America on the one hand to form the Cordillera, and underneath Asia on the other hand forming the volcanic island arcs of Japan and the Philippines along the eastern margin of Asia. And it appears likely that this process will continue with the Atlantic Ocean inexorably opening to form the next super ocean and the Pacific Ocean inexorably closing, with the likely end result that one morning people in Vancouver Island will wake up and see Mount Fuji looming in the horizon, and America will ultimately join the eastern margin of Asia to form the next supercontinent that will Amasia, as I like to call it, the supercontinent that will result from the amalgamation of the Americas and Asia.
Mountains rising, fault lines cracking, waters rising, the earth is moving. Ancient forces, hidden precious, great rifts and tiny fissures, underground, the earth is moving.
Well, this is Norm Fontaine again. I have my rocks that I carry around with me, and there's different purposes for rocks. Like, we use rocks for our sweat lodges, and sweat lodges are very important, and we consider the rocks, we call them Mishomis, which is grandfathers, and the rocks are used to come in, similar to a sauna. They're heated in the fire. But as we do our ceremony, we offer tobacco, and we give the respect that's due to all the things that the Creator has created on Mother Earth. And as we bring those rocks into our sweat lodge, the idea is to give your, offer your sacrifices or your, you know, the pain that you're enduring for the human race, is you give it to the rocks, and the rocks absorb that pain and that hurt and the sacrifice you make for all beings on Earth. So the rocks in our culture have a very important significance to them.
Continents are essentially temporary groupings of rocks moving around in the oceans. And there's no, they've moved both north and south, and they've moved both east and west. The continents are that part of a plate that sticks up above the water. That plate, it continues until it comes to a plate boundary. For instance, in the middle of the Atlantic, there's a plate boundary between North America and Europe. And at various places in the Pacific, there are plate boundaries between these massive continental plates, which are 90% or more or less underwater, perhaps 70% underwater, and these continents stick up.
Down on the ocean floor, in the middles of the ocean, or certainly in the middle of the Atlantic, there is a vast sort of rift, if you like, in the ocean floor. It's actually in the middle of a kind of a mountain range, a mid-ocean ridge. Hi, I'm Robin Riddighoff. I'm the chief scientist of the Geological Survey of Canada, and I'm here in my office here in Ottawa. At these mid-ocean ridges, material is coming up, molten material is coming up from the mantle, and essentially what is happening there is the two plates are moving apart from these ridges. So they are moving apart, and the process was called sea floor spreading, because the sea floor is actually spreading apart. This is where the convection cell comes up, if you like, and the two things move apart. Now, the speed which it moves apart it varies. Some ridges are moving as slow as 1 centimeter a year, others are moving up to 10 centimeters a year. It's not fast. Nothing on the Earth is very fast. Now, once you'd accepted that the seafloor was spreading, then unless the whole, and this was happening all over, it was happening in the Atlantic, it was happening in the Pacific, and happening in the Indian Ocean, happening all over the place. So unless the whole Earth was getting bigger, and that was quickly decided that it wasn't, then somewhere material must be being destroyed. You can't be continually spreading apart in the middle. Somewhere this material must be meeting something else and going down underneath. These are these two plates moving together and crashing together, as I was talking about earlier in the whole process of plate tectonics. And those are called subduction zones, where one plate meets another and goes down underneath. Now, when it goes down underneath, this is where all these wonderful things start happening. First thing that happens as it goes down is it pushes its way down and it creates earthquakes. As it goes down, it eventually reaches a point where the material going down begins to melt. And then we go into this sorting process we were talking about earlier, where the denser material carries on down, the lighter material moves up. When the lighter material moves up, it becomes magma, and it starts punching its way through the overlying plate, and then you get a line of volcanoes. And the west coast of Canada is one of the best examples anywhere on the globe of this process of seafloor.